This is the post-GOP convention edition of The Week in Review. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, August 31st. Mitt Romney accepted his party's nomination for president last night and spoke about his family, his vision, and criticized President Obama for not getting the job done.
President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans. And to heal the planet. My promise is to help you and your family.
We will welcome your thoughts and your reactions to Mitt Romney's address before the convention last night and the issues raised by other speakers, including Wisconsin Congressman and Republican vice presidential nominee Paul Ryan. And then there is Clint Eastwood's endorsement of Mitt Romney last night. What did you think of that? We welcome your input at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, we will find out what our guests think. We have with us two guests from different perspectives. Tom Still is with us. He is president of the Wisconsin Technology Council. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Tom, also a former associate editor of the Wisconsin State Journal, and you covered a lot of conventions in your day, so we can hear some of your reflections on that as we go along. And Ed Filone is with us. He is associate professor of law at Marquette University. And good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, I thank you both for being here. Let me start with you, Tom Still. Just general reaction to the convention as a whole. Were Republicans successful in putting on a united face and convincing viewers to support Mitt Romney and not Barack Obama?
Mm-hmm. I think they were successful in the starter that you mentioned about the united face. I mean, they pulled that off. It was the divisions were less evident than they were during the primary campaign, and I think Romney himself did a pretty good job defining himself and connecting, which, you know, when you looked at some of the polls, a lot of folks thought he was aloof or, you know, not really connecting with American people. So that was probably a strong point from where he sat. And there were some other speeches that mostly about him, Ann Romney, Condoleezza Rice. I think those were two pretty effective speeches right there.
And your general thoughts first, Ed Filone.
Well, I think intelligent people are wondering why we even have these conventions anymore. They're scripted infomercials, really this Republican convention just struck me as the nadir, the worst example of lies, distortions, and salesmanship replacing policy prescriptions. And I think for a candidate like Romney, the big discussion beforehand was he needed to be more personable, more likable. I think the problem is that he's by nature secretive, cold. He's changed his positions a great deal over the years on very important issues to suit the moment, issues like abortion and health care. So there's a real trust issue. And at the end of this infomercial, I think many undecided and independent voters would say, I still don't trust this guy.
Well, let's we'll talk about some of the lies that that Ed referred to in just a moment. But let me talk a little bit about Mitt Romney. What he said last night in terms of. He said President Obama promised to, you know, stop the oceans from rising and to save the planet. I am going to promise to help you and your family. That was a little bit of a jab, wasn't it, Tom Still, saying, President Obama doesn't care about you. He cares about global warming or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, conventions are on both parties are always going to be about rhetoric and framing how the other candidate looks from their perspective, how they want people to view the candidate. But it is, you know, in this case, I think the message that was there throughout was, you know, 4 years of a not good economy. And, you know, is the president more concerned about some other issues than that? You know, no one can get inside the president's head and tell you that. But certainly that was one of the messages that you that this really was about that the themes moving ahead will be about the economy. And, you know, I think about the Democratic convention coming up and some past conventions. In 1992, the Republicans really kind of blew it at their convention by missing the economic issue and talking about just about everything else. And, of course, Bill Clinton roared to victory. And so it'll be interesting to see whether the Democrats turn their convention into a message about just about everything but the economy and really, really miss that opportunity.
Interesting. I mean, there is the Republicans have a lot of ammunition at Fallon when it comes to the poor performance of the economy. What do you think?
Well, first let me say I know and respect Tom Still, and I don't mean to disagree with anything he says, but, you know, the issue of global warming and green companies is an economic issue. And I think that this little clip you played from Romney just underscores the incoherence of the Republican message. Wind farms in Iowa, huge issue out there. Here's something that helps the economy and also creates jobs and also helps the environment. You know, there's all kinds. We have Governor Walker was touting the freshwater technologies and the potential in Milwaukee for this to create jobs. Well, making better use of our water resources is an environmental issue as well as an economic issue. So, you know, it's one of these rhetorical false choices. And I think that was the problem with Romney's speech in general. There was no theme. There were no specific policy proposals. There were a lot of platitudes such as I believe in your family or I believe in America. But in terms of, you know, answering the basic questions, especially on the economy. What was the root cause of our economic problems in 2008? What caused the recession? Nothing. What did President Obama do wrong? What policy proposals would Romney do instead to fix the economy? Nothing. So, yes, yeah, Tom is right. The economy is a huge issue, but I still see more platitudes than details on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, first, it's okay to disagree. It happens around my house and my office every day. The sustainable economy, that's a really good point because that's happening. I mean, I see it with businesses that we deal with, and I see it just throughout the economy every day. The question is whether the governmental role has been right, whether the consistency has been there in terms of policies that could help shape that. I think there's no doubt that what's going on in energy, water, and a variety of other sectors is really transforming our economy. And I wanted to get back to the notion that conventions don't matter. I remember going back, the first one I covered, first two I covered were in 1984. People were saying that then. And, but I still think they're sort of a gathering of the tribes and the official start of a campaign. There's a whole bunch of people across this country who don't necessarily pay attention until the conventions come along. Then they begin to tune in, and it ramps up right up through the election. They're not nominating conventions anymore. Nothing's brokered. But I think they still have that value in terms of being the rhetorical starting point for a lot of people.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Tom Still and Ed Fallon. This is our Friday Week in Review. We will be pretty much a convention heavy during this week in review. Talk about the highlights and maybe the lowlights of the Republican convention in Tampa all week. And we will preview some more the Democratic convention, which is coming up next week. And we welcome your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Tom Still, you mentioned Ann Romney and Condoleezza Rice were two other speeches this week that you thought were particularly good. Any particular reason why those two stand out?
Condoleezza Rice, of course, because of her experience, her breadth of knowledge, and her ability to connect, and I just, you know, had the feeling that a lot of people were looking at her and thinking, yeah, this is, you know, this is something, someone who's a star within that Republican constellation. And Ann Romney, because I think she very successfully helped begin that process of, you know, almost humanizing her own husband. And because that's, you know, that's where the, as far as you can tell, that's where the polls show that Romney lacks versus President Obama, who has always, you know, had that kind of connection. It's what propelled him to victory in 08. And so that's where they probably had a really strong role within the convention.
Mm-hmm. Ed Falone, do you think Ann Romney and Condoleezza Rice fortified the Romney-Ryan ticket in terms of its cred with women?
Hardly. I think that on women's issues, first of all, I'm glad Ann Romney loves her husband. It's good to establish that. Every 4 years, we see this little ritual where the spouse of a Republican candidate comes out and tells women to trust their husbands. Don't worry, he won't really do what these right-wing conservative groups want to. He won't really restrict reproductive rights for women. You know, we saw this with Barbara Bush and also with Laura Bush. It's just this little ritual, and then women sit back and see that it's not the spouses that have the real control over policy. It's of course the political interest groups. Women's issues are not a matter of putting a female face on the podium. Women's issues are economic issues. Single moms rely disproportionately on the social safety net, and they depend on Medicare being there. They depend on Medicaid being expanded to reach more families in poverty or just barely above poverty, which the Medicare expansion under Obamacare would have helped them greatly. So economic issues are female issues, and in particular, preserving the social safety net from Romney and Ryan's budget plan is a woman's issue.
Let me also ask Tom Still maybe first on this. Did Condoleezza Rice, her speech and the fact that she was the Secretary of State under President Bush, highlight that the Romney-Ryan ticket doesn't necessarily have a lot of foreign policy experience on it?
There were some who I'm sure that crossed their mind, but I think it also spoke to the fact that Condoleezza Rice understands that the potential is there and that the broad experience is there for both Romney and Ryan to step up when it comes to those kinds of issues, and she would be, you know, the level of advisor that I would think they would tap into. And, you know, of course, President Obama, he's had 4 years of experience, but he did not come in with a wealth of foreign policy experience either. So it may be a comfort factor in just the sense that someone that experienced, that seasoned, as, you know, former Secretary Rice was able to provide that kind of support.
Mm-hmm. Ed,
first of all, there's a real problem with relying on Condoleezza Rice for foreign policy credentials, given that she was there in the Bush administration. She's associated with costly and largely ineffective invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq as a means of combating al-Qaeda. And so I'm not sure that she's necessarily a symbol of success in the foreign policy field. Her speech did a lot of claiming that Romney is a leader, but gave no indication on foreign policy issues of where he would lead the country. All we know from Romney's past statements in, for example, Middle Eastern relations is that he would allow Netanyahu to dictate U.S. policy from Israel, and that he's willing to go to war with Iran. So this is not a good place or a good direction to lead the country. The one thing you can say about President Obama is that by shifting from large-scale invasions of host nations to terrorists to a policy of assassination of the top leaders of al-Qaeda, whether you agree with either of those two policy alternatives, whether you believe both of those policy alternatives are illegal under international law. Bottom line, the policy of assassinating the top leaders of Al-Qaeda has been incredibly effective. And if you judge Obama's foreign policy on that criteria, it's been a huge success.
Let me switch topics a little bit, but it's related because it reminded me that one of Clint Eastwood's criticisms of President Obama in his surprise appearance at the convention last night, I guess in the afternoon people figured out that the star who was going to be endorsing Mitt Romney last night was Clint Eastwood, and he got out there and he did a kind of an odd routine where he was addressing an invisible President Obama, presumably sitting in an empty chair. And one of the things he said was, he criticized the president for the war in Afghanistan. And I'm wondering, Tom Still, general reactions to Clint Eastwood's endorsement last night. And isn't that kind of an odd thing to pick on him for?
The war in Afghanistan has a lot of parents. I mean, there's no doubt about that. The thing about the Eastwood appearance that just struck me from someone who had covered a lot of these conventions, a bit odd, was that he went a lot longer than what was expected. I don't think he really followed what script he might have had. And there was it was a bit of a momentum break between the biographical film of Governor Romney and then, you know, the governor's appearance. But what... it was a little different in that regard. For a lot of people, did Clint make their day? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Your critique, Ed Flon?
Well, I think my reaction was that after listening to Romney's speech and seeing Clint in the empty chair, I would rather vote for the empty chair than Romney. Clint personified the angry old white man that has become the key target demographic of the Republican Party. And Lindsey Graham, Republican leader himself, admitted this. And this is really a recipe, a prescription for political suicide for the Republican Party. Despite their attempts at the convention to trot out speakers with Hispanic surnames, the fact of the matter is that the Republican platform is harshly anti-immigrant, and that's going to continue to hurt them with Latino voters. The Republican Party makes no effort to address concerns in the African-American communities and in urban areas, and therefore is ignoring the increasing diversity of our country. The Republican platform is hostile to younger voters in terms of support for education. There's going to be fewer and fewer angry old white men who see Clint Eastwood as a contemporary, and by continuing to direct their party's focus at that demographic, the Republican Party risks shrinking away.
Let's take a call from Dave in Wanakee on the Clint Eastwood speech. Hi, Dave.
Oh, hi. I don't remember hardly anything about Mitt Romney's speech, and I don't remember much about Ann Romney or Paul Ryan, but I'm going to remember this Clint Eastwood thing where he's having a debate with a chair, empty chair, and it seemed like for part of the debate he was losing. He finishes up with the go ahead, make my day. He really should have said, you got to ask a chair a question. Do you feel lucky?
Yeah. Do you feel lucky? I've heard some other commentators, Tom, still say that this was a mistake because most people around the water cooler today were going to be talking about Clint Eastwood and not Mitt Romney.
Yeah, it was a distraction. I mean, I don't know really how else to put it in those terms. Now what I would say, though, is in terms of the angry old white man, he really, at least he was the only one. I mean, there were a lot of other speakers who really did make strong appeals to different segments of the Republican Party. I think I think this will be the danger in the Democratic convention coming up. If they portray themselves as a party of sort of kind of loose-knit liberal special interest, they will be behind the gun again. They will have a problem moving forward. I think they need to portray themselves as a party that represents all of America, not just certain facets. And so that's where, you know, with women have a variety of interests. They come from all walks of life politically. They have all kinds of interests. It's not all that different from what you look at in the male population. It's going to be interesting to see how the Democrats manage themselves as a party of leadership right now versus some kind of a loose-knit confederation.
Tom Still is the president of the Wisconsin Technology Council. Ed Filone is also with us. He is an associate professor of law at Marquette University. They are our two guests today for the Week in Review. We welcome your input on the issues in the news this week, most of them coming from the Republican convention in Tampa. 1-800-642-1234. We're going to move on to the speech given by vice presidential nominee Paul Ryan when we come back. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's your views on the news. Every Friday after 4, you can call in to talk about your thoughts about the week's top news story. That's your views on the news after 4 this afternoon. By the way, Monday at this time, it is Labor Day, and we, as usual, will be here, and we will have our annual Labor Day show during this 8 o'clock hour on Monday. We have the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, Phil Neuenfeld, joining us to talk about Labor Day 2012. That's coming up on Monday. This is our post-Republican convention edition of the Week in Review. We are talking with Tom Still and Ed Filone about the issues raised at the Republican convention throughout the week, the issues raised in Mitt Romney's party nomination acceptance speech last night. Also on Wednesday night, Wisconsin's own Congressman Paul Ryan accepted his party's nomination for vice president. And he talked about the plant, the GM plant in Janesville closing.
A lot of guys I went to high school with worked at that GM plant. Right there at that plant, candidate Obama said, "I believe that if our government is there to support you, this plant will be here for another 100 years. That's what he said in 2008. Well, as it turned out, that plant didn't last another year. It is locked up and empty to this day. And that's how it is in so many towns, where the recovery that was promised is nowhere in sight."
So that particular clip got a lot of attention. Democrats in particular saying that he's misleading at best with that story and maybe lying, saying that it was under the Bush administration that the GM plant in Janesville closed. It was in December of 2008. However, the Republicans point out that there was still production going on with an Isuzu truck line, a medium truck line that had, I don't know, 60 workers or so still working on, and that was finished up in April of 2009. So Tom Still, was Paul Ryan fudging the facts or not?
You know, the truth of the matter about the GM closing in Janesville is that, you know, it's hard to point to any particular president that, whether it was Bush or Obama or a bunch of people in between, this was a market decision. This was something that was in the works for years, if not generations, in terms of how at that time, GM had been really kind of unraveled in terms of how it was as a company. There was going to be downsizing. There was trouble. All of this handwriting was on the wall, one way or the other. The more important story right now is that and this diverges a bit from the convention itself, but if people look behind the scenes now in Janesville, that community is beginning to come back in a lot of different ways, and it's a much more diverse economy in that city that it's managed to come back in some ways in the last few years. So I'm always suspect when anybody blames something like that on one political leader or another, because it's usually been years in the making.
Mm-hmm. Your reaction to that that clip, Ed Filone?
Well, I'm not going to dodge the question. Paul Ryan told at least four demonstrable lies during his speech. Big lies, policy lies. Listen, these aren't little lies about irrelevant, inconsequential things like where was Obama born, you know, his birth certificate, or even going back to John Kerry's campaign, you know, was he really a war hero or not? We're talking about policy statements, facts that policy is based on, and telling lies. The first was the closing of the Janesville plant he attributed to Obama's policies. It's not a Democratic fact or a Republican fact that it closed in December of 2008 before Obama was sworn in. It closed in 2008, period. So there was little, if anything, that an elected president awaiting his inauguration could do.
Let me jump in, though, Ed Filone. What about the Republicans who say, wait, it was still open in 2009 until April, and there was still some hope perhaps something could be done?
You know, we have letters on congressional stationery signed by Paul Ryan indicating that the decision was made to close it in 2008, begging for a change, hoping to change that decision. You know, you don't just close and open a plant at a snap of a fingers, and Tom knows this too. You make an announcement, you wind things down, and yes, they may have kept some limited production going, but it would not have been anything easy to ramp up full production again once the decision was made to close the plant. The other lies that...
Wait, I will. We'll get to those, but Tom wanted to comment on this particular issue.
Yeah, the one piece where perhaps the president's open for criticism is in the fall of 08. This was after the announcement had been made. He said, I will lead an effort to retool plants like the GM facility in Janesville so we can build the fuel-efficient cars of tomorrow and create good-paying jobs in Wisconsin and all across America. That hasn't happened, obviously, with that plant. It remains shuttered. And so, you know, the question would be then, after the announcement, did the president say, then candidate Obama, say things that led people to believe that there would be some kind of presidential savior swooping in?
So let me, Tom, you're not seriously suggesting that President Obama should be blamed for not doing more to help the auto industry when he led the effort to bail out the industry and save the industry, whereas Mitt Romney said, let it go bankrupt. Are you really saying we should criticize Obama for not doing enough, given what he already accomplished?
In this case, after the closing took place, he did specifically mention the Janesville plant. That's the one area, again, I'm saying that these things take years. I think you just said that, Ed, that these kinds of plant closings and all the things that swirl around them really take place over a lot of time. But that was one specific area where he did come back and address that.
Let me, I know that there are a number of other areas, Ed Filone, that you want to talk about where you believe Paul Ryan made misleading statements or lied. Madeline in Madison, though, is also concerned about some of those items in Paul Ryan's speech. Madeline, go ahead.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering that after the news came out about all of the lies and misleading comments that Paul Ryan made in his speech at the national convention, do you think voters will take the things Paul Ryan says with a grain of salt? Do you think they'll kind of pay attention and actually investigate those lies and kind of let that sway their opinions about these political figures? Or do you think they'll just take it at face value and accept his comments?
Okay, but there wasn't a specific one that troubled you, Madeline?
Not particularly. They all just really, I mean, after reading, going through the whole list, it seemed like he just made a lot of specific comments that were untruth.
All right. Well, I know Ed Filon, again, you had you wanted to talk about others. The one that a lot of people are reacting to is when Paul Ryan said that President Obama stole $700 billion some from Medicare to fund Obamacare, and that that's hurting Medicare. He wants to preserve it. What was that one of them?
That's one of them. First of all, to characterize decreased future spending on Medicare and decreasing expected costs, to characterize that as a cut in benefits to Medicare recipients is false. Second of all, to attack it while Ryan's own budget plan contains the exact same provision is the height of hypocrisy. The third lie was relating to the Simpson-Bowles Debt Commission. He criticized Obama for not supporting the commission and its grand bargain on reducing the deficit. Of course, Ryan was on that commission. He voted against the recommendations. He did a great deal to block the success of the commission, and really the only hope of the commission was if it had bipartisan support before its report reached the president. And, of course, Ryan helped destroy any chance of that. The final lie related to the stimulus spending, Ryan said it was a waste of money and it didn't create jobs. Economists have demonstrated not only did it create jobs, it saved a very large number of existing jobs from being lost in the recession and prevented the recession from being worse. And, of course, despite his criticisms of stimulus funding, Ryan fought to get stimulus funds for his district because of its supposed economic benefit.
Yeah, but Ed Filon, in all these cases, and I'll get Tom to respond too, are these really lies, or is this political rhetoric? Is this putting the best foot forward kind of thing?
Well, these are lies. I mean, because what we're talking about is creating an alternative reality. We're talking about boiling down what really happened and the circumstances of the time, what was politically possible in Congress, given the divided nature of Congress, the depth of the recession, so what was really possible in terms of government action, and boiling it down to a very simplistic and purposefully misleading bottom line, without any regard for the fact that you're misleading the voters. And what the caller referred to when she said, you know, will people really notice and care? This is the scary moment. You know, some people are asking, are we living in a post-truth world where it's all marketing, it's all message, and whoever spends the most and promotes the hell out of their message is going to win in the ballot box without any regard to the underlying reality? That, I think, is the scary moment we find ourselves in.
All right, Tom, your thoughts on these various instances that Ed Filon mm-hmm. says Paul Ryan was lying?
Yeah. Well, and let me get back to the caller's question, because I think it was a really legitimate one and a poignant one. It was the notion that, hey, will people just accept this at face value, or is there going to be a lot more out on these points and a lot more debate around them and a more factual framework established? I think the answer is yes on all of that. That, again, that's why, you know, when these conventions become sort of the rhetorical starting point for the fall campaigns, from there people get engaged, the news media gets sharper in its looks, and I really do hope that all of this is out there with a fuller view. You know, let's take Medicare. There were things in Congressman Ryan's speech where he did omit some things that were out there that had involved both parties in terms of some of the structure around this debate. The question is, can, given the demographics with Medicare, given the really severe issues about where we could be in a number of years in terms of paying for that, is it an overall healthy thing that this campaign will be where people can really get behind the facts and talk about what should happen? I hope so. It hasn't fully happened so far, but at least it's a starting point.
We're coming dangerously close to rewarding demagogues. This is almost like saying we should be happy that Joe McCarthy raised the issue of communism because it was an important issue to examine more fully. Demagogues are demagogues. and raising an issue with distortions, omitting key facts, attempting to mislead the public, I don't see any good that comes out of that.
And let me counter Ed Filone and get your response to Republicans who say Democrats are misleading, for example, when they show the ad of Paul Ryan wheeling an elderly woman in a wheelchair and pushing her off the cliff.
Well, if what's the underlying fact that they dispute? Is it that benefits will be reduced for those persons over 65 under the Romney-Ryan plan? They will be. Now, they're upset because the means by which the commercial demonstrates this is showing a Paul Ryan lookalike pushing an elderly person over a cliff. But the commercial does not assert the fact that Paul Ryan actually did this. The underlying fact is true.
That the nation's elderly senior citizens are being thrown off a cliff rhetorically over these Medicare reforms?
Well, the Romney-Ryan plan would, first of all, replace government benefits that rise with inflation with a voucher plan where the benefits are fixed and do not rise. There is a formula for it to increase, but it doesn't rise as fast as inflation. So if health care costs go up faster than inflation, then your spending power diminishes. So that's the first part. The second part is if they do repeal Obamacare, the Medicaid donut hole prescription drug coverage fix disappears, and so seniors over 65 will be paying higher costs for prescription drug benefits. And then there's just the broader problem that if you split benefits between those over 65 who get one set of Medicare provisions and those under 65 who have other alternatives, over time you're going to see the risk pool. Medicare becomes older and sicker and older and sicker, so you don't have the cost spreading between relatively healthy and relatively sick people that is vital for any kind of insurance program.
Do you think... Well, go ahead, Tom.
Well, the first point about, you know, demagoguery, you know, politics has always been about message, about rhetoric, about emotion. I guarantee you, having covered... I think now a total of 8 conventions, both parties, over time. There are plenty of demagogues in both parties, and I'm sure that you will hear some at the Democratic National Convention as well, just because it's a part of it. Now, but this is, the Medicare debate is interesting because I hope the debate from here forth focuses on the fact, can we afford, as a nation, Medicare, Medicaid, and the kind of health care reforms that the president has supported? How can those three systems be made to work together in an affordable way? And so that's going to be the question facing the country over time. And I hope that is engaged in the 67 days remaining between now and the election.
Do you think the Democrats at their convention, Ed Filone, will say, this is what we will do to strengthen Medicare?
Well, I think you're going to see, I hope you're going to see, first of all, a vigorous explanation of Obamacare and how it attempts to bend the cost curve, reduce the increase in health care spending, which is really what's driving the problem and which is completely ignored by the Romney-Ryan budget plan, and also how it attempts to preserve the maximum benefit for seniors and expand eligibility for the program while still allowing those who want private insurance to take that route. There's no attempt to displace private insurance. So there has to be that explanation, and I hope that they will do that. I think there will also be a very basic explanation that you cannot do what Tom says we have to do, get the spending, long-term spending that's creating this deficit time bomb. You can't get that under control without looking at revenue increases, meaning tax cuts, progressive tax cuts on the most wealthy over $200,000 a year in income. And by refusing to discuss, tax increases, if I said tax cuts, by refusing to discuss tax increases, by refusing to discuss bringing in new revenues as part of a comprehensive plan to fix the ticking deficit time bomb, the Republicans are really just giving a one-sided prescription. Their solution is the only way to go, when the reality is there's a very viable solution, a mix of tax increases and spending cuts that the majority of Americans want, but that the Republicans refuse to even consider.
I'm way past my break time. In fact, way past quiz time. And I'm going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to do the quiz right now, take our break, and then we'll continue talking about some of the other issues at the Republican National Convention. In Congressman Paul Ryan's speech to the Republican National Convention on Wednesday night, he contrasted his iPod selections, which he said start with AC/DC and end with Zeppelin, with former Governor Mitt Romney's. What kind of music did Paul Ryan say Governor Romney likes? That's the Week in Review question, 1-800-642-1234, if you'd like to guess, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and the winner will be eligible for one of the books that we have featured on the program in recent weeks. So, what kind of music does Paul Ryan say Governor Romney has on his iPod? And we'll give you 5 minutes or so to call in your answer. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Veronica Rickert will be in after 9 o'clock, and she will talk with her guest about memory. That's coming up after 9. We are reviewing the news of the week from the GOP convention with Tom Still and Ed Falone. Another speaker at the convention on Tuesday night was Governor Scott Walker. He took to the stage to tout the reforms that he made in his first 18 months in office, as well as winning his recall election in June. Governor Walker says that he is confident Romney and Ryan will make the tough decisions to get the country's fiscal house in order. Do you think, Tom Still, we're not necessarily reviewing every last word that Governor Walker had to say here, but can Wisconsin be a model for the nation in some ways in terms of balancing the budget?
I think there's a lot about Wisconsin that's been a model through, you know, decades, if not longer. But in this case, I think I hope that the campaign from here on does focus on some of those really big issues. Ed identified some. I mean, how will Republicans deal with the question about increased revenues, about whether that's a factor in the deficit reduction? How will Democrats better explain how we can afford Medicaid, Medicare, and a different health care plan, and how we could make all of that work so there's more of some seamlessness between that, and what are the market things factors that could really help there. I think there'd be a lot of tough questions that have to be answered between now and November, and to the extent that Wisconsin's done some of that in some highly visible ways, I hope that is an example.
Mm-hmm. Ed, what do you think?
Well, I think what was most noticeable about the job growth in the last 2 years is that across the country, those states that slashed public employment the most had the lowest job growth. And Wisconsin fell into that category with the budget bill and reductions in spending on public education. And so, I think that we do need to have a real debate and a real hard sit-down about how government jobs do assist the economy, and exclusively focusing on slashing government jobs, which is what happened in Greece, what has been the European model, hurts the economy because it reduces spending power. We need to have a economic plan that sees a balance between public employment and private employment as a way to move the economy forward. And I'm hoping that people will look at Wisconsin and learn from the mistakes of the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are you hoping to see addressed, Tom Still, first from the Democratic convention next week?
I think they have to tackle the economy issue head on. And again, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, that's what the Republicans messed up at the 92 convention, and Bill Clinton had the momentum for the rest of the way. And so I think they can't avoid that. I think they can't. They have to come across as a party that is prepared to lead and to continue to lead and to do so in some ways that address all Americans. If it's a confederation of different special interests, it's probably not going to play all that well.
Mm-hmm. Ed Falone?
I'd like to see President Obama pick up Chris Christie's theme from the other night and talk about the hard choices. The hard choice to withdraw from two land-based wars, which were sinkholes, and move to a policy of targeted assassination, which was and is controversial, but was effective. The hard choice to push for stimulus spending in the depths of a very severe recession when that was unpopular. The hard choice to bail out the auto industry when that was questioned severely. The hard choice to push for health care and pass a reform bill, which was not perfect, did not satisfy everyone, but was a major legislative accomplishment that presidents have sought since the Truman administration. Obama has made a lot of hard choices, and I think that if he talks about that, I think that he'll come out of the convention with a huge lead.
Yeah, well, we'll be covering the convention, the Democratic convention, as well next week. We have I have to quickly go to the Week in Review quiz winner, but Tom, you wanted to share a favorite convention memory?
Oh, just a couple of things that maybe not a lot of people know unless they're sort of there. 88, Atlanta, Democratic convention. Bill Clinton had this incredibly long speech. It was really his first major preview, you know, in front of a national audience. And the reason for that was that he was basically trying to kill time because Michael Dukakis was not yet in town because of, and nobody
knew. I didn't
know
that he was filling for time. I just heard that was a really long speech.
It was, and it ended with when he said, and in conclusion, the entire convention hall goes up for applause. Yeah.
Let me hold you on that memory. That's a good one. We need to reveal the winner of the Week in Review quiz, Gary from Iron River. Congratulations. He knew that Governor Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan differ on music on their iPods. Here's how Paul Ryan told it.
We're a full generation apart, Governor Romney and I. And in some ways we're different. There are the songs on his iPod, which I've heard on the campaign bus. And I've heard it on many hotel elevators.
All right, so elevator music was the answer. Congratulations to Gary from Iron River. So, elevator music, Tom Still, or AC/DC?
Oh, AC/DC.
Ed?
Classic jazz.
All right, there we go. Ed Falone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure.
And Tom Still, President of the Wisconsin Technology Council, thank you as well.
Thank you, Joy.
We will be back on Labor Day. We have an interesting lineup for you on Labor Day. We'll talk about the history of labor and beer at 6 o'clock. We'll have more politics in our state capitol report after 7, and we will talk with the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO after 8. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Amanda Magnus for producing the program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
My friend Michelle mentioned how much she was enjoying her pole dancing classes, and the light bulb went on. And then a Groupon showed up in my email the next day, and I thought, that's a sign, right?
Join us for more true stories told live next time on the Moth Radio Hour from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Tonight at 7 on the Ideas Network.
Listener supported. You hear that all the time, but it's worth celebrating. Wisconsin Public Radio exists because of listeners like you. Go to WPR.org, click Support WPR, and learn more.